This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
He's a gorilla of destiny, a Bullet Club OG, continuing on the legacy of the most feared name in all of wrestling. From Tonga to Japan to America, you are now entering Tama's Island. With your host, the babyface heel, Tama Tonga.
All righty, folks, we are back once again. It's that time of the week. You're on Twitch. You're listening to Tama's Island. I'm your co-host, as always, Ross W. Berman IV, the Culture Vulture, the Folk City Hustler, the Disruptor, whatever the hell you want to call me. I'm here holding down the fort while Tama is on a travel hiatus with the G1 Climax. Last night he was able to get the win over Tai Chi, getting a little revenge for that feud they had in the summer over the Iron Fingers of Doom. But because of that, it means it's just going to be me kind of holding down the fort. But luckily, I got a co-host with me who has had a pretty hell of a wild weekend in the wrestling world, a Tama's Island regular, and someone who it sounds like is going to be featured a lot more on the show as we go forward. Please, y'all, welcome Kenesha to the show. How you doing, Kenesha? How's the day treating you?
The day has treated me better than it did yesterday. Let's just say that.
I was going to say, yeah, because yesterday you had some serious travel issues. We'll get into why you had travel issues in a second. But yeah, you had Southwest left you high and dry, it sounds like.
They canceled 2,000 flights.
Oof.
Because they fired employees that didn't want to get vaccinated. So, yeah.
Oof. Damn. Yeah. Well, I'm glad you were able to finally navigate your way home. I know it's not exactly an easy time to be flying these days, but let's start off with your weekend, because you had a hell of a weekend this weekend in the wrestling world. We'll get to the G1. We'll get to the big AEW Rampage buy-in news that was just announced a couple of hours ago. We'll get to all that in a second. But this weekend, Kenesha, you were over at the New York Comic Con. Doing a panel on diversity in wrestling. Can you give our listeners a little bit of a background on what you were doing at Comic-Con?
Hell yeah. So we had an amazing panel. It was called The Beauty of Blackness in Wrestling. It was sponsored by Tiger Driver 9X. I don't know if you guys know about them, but they are an amazing company run by Chris Wilson, who's a young cat, but he has so much knowledge about marketing and business. It's so sad that I have to learn from him.
I was going to say, Chris is young as hell. I want to say he's like 23, 24, somewhere. Yeah. Like he's basically like the Daniel Garcia of the merch game right now.
This dude knows his shit, and he teaches us how to do things. So he allowed myself, Faye Jackson, Jay Rose, who is over, well, he used to be with Paradigm,
yep.
Seahawk, Cameron Hawkins, and Kazim. And we had an amazing panel. We had a run-in, of course, that was very interesting.
who was the run-in? I know who it was, but give everyone a bit of a taste.
We had MJF decide to ruin all things black and wrestling, which is the most contradictory thing ever.
I was guess that's the most MJF thing I've ever heard. Shows up to New York and poops on someone's party.
But it was hilarious because it was in the middle of me talking out of all people.
And of course.
He walks right in and completely, you know, has his 5 minutes of fame. But it was great. It was fantastic. It was the first time I've ever done a panel at Comic-Con about wrestling. So that was great. We had a lot of people turn out, way more than we expected.
Oh, hell yeah. You had a good turn. That's what was like the... Because you know, it was obviously a very long weekend. Comic Con's a big place, but what was like the real kind of highlight for y'all when it came down to not just the panel, but just the weekend in general? What was the What was the big highlight?
The highlight, honestly, was all of us getting together finally after this crazy ass pandemic, because that was the first time a lot of us had met. You know, me and Fair have been friends for years, but, you know, first time I got to meet Cameron and Kazim finally. It was actually first time I got to meet Chris.
Okay.
Even though we've been friends online for a while. So just everybody getting together. Then we went to the bar after, got food. Mm-hmm. We had a really, really good time. I think that was the highlight. And then the fact that we got to network with a lot of wrestlers who no clue knew who the hell I was. I was like, oh, okay. That's cool. Thanks.
That's got to be a damn good feeling. I was going to say, I saw some photos online of folks like Tony Schiavone showed up at the Tiger Driver booth at one point.
We were in the middle of setting up and Tony Schiavone just come by and just like going through my jewelry. I was like, hey.
Hell yeah.
But that was cool. I got a chance to sell jewelry. Katie Forbes loved my crap. So she's ordering things. I had a phone call come in. Sorry.
All good. All good. We can still hear you.
Okay, perfect. So meeting Katie Forbes, if you have not had the opportunity to meet her, like she's a lot on camera. Yep. But she's sweet as fucking pie. Like, she's amazing. Yeah, she's great.
That's good to hear. Because between her and the recent, like, I don't know how to put the renaissance that RVD has been on for the past, like, I don't know, 5 to 10 years. I do like them as kind of the first couple of wrestling right now.
They're so nice.
Yeah.
They're so nice. That's like my fourth time meeting RVD. And every time I meet him, he's a doll baby. So meeting her for the first time was great.
Absolutely. That sounds like a great, great time. But Comic-Con wasn't the only thing you got to experience this weekend. You were also at the GCW show in Atlantic City this past Saturday. GCW presented Fight Club. And I was watching this here in Chicago on my couch. It was a hell of a show. You had obviously you had Moxley versus Gage, but then you also had a damn fine match between Effie and Matt Cardona. Yeah. Just a lot of, and also GCW announcing that they're going to be at the Hammerstein Ballroom in, I believe it's January 23rd is the date that they announced. What was the show like? Because this wasn't just any GCW show. They were in their, what I consider their home venue, the Showboat in Atlantic City. What's the ambiance? What's the vibe like in that venue?
It was incredible, to be honest with you. You know, GCW is known for having that rowdy crowd. Mm-hmm. You know, when I tell you passion runs through the veins of those people like no other, it is real. Yep. But it was a great show. First of all, let's just talk about how fucking crazy. I'm sorry, I curse a lot.
That's fine. So does Thomas. So do I. We can curse up a fucking storm on here as long as we don't like throw out slurs and stuff like that.
Yeah. Right. So I think Effie really shined for me because to hang with Matt Cardona the way that he did, it was fantastic. And his storytelling abilities is just crazy. You know, the whole choke out, but then he starts to like it. So you don't know what to do with it. It's great. And then go ahead.
No, I was going to say, and him and Cardona are such, I feel like they're perfect foils for each other because like Cardona is, he's so much in that, I don't know how to put it other than that kind of bro breeder culture. It's like it's all Disney and being a fiance guy and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. Whereas, and then you've got Effie, who is the king of the nighttime, the king of the internet, whatever you want to call him. It creates
Studio 54. If that was a person,
yes, it's yes, Effie. it's Studio 54 versus Club 33 or whatever the hell that Disney club is where they let you dine with Cinderella. But they create such this great yin and yang, and then you add the fact that Effie has been running around with Allie Catch and the team Bussy, and now Chelsea Green making a shocking debut in GCW, helping Matt Cardona get the Internet Championship back. Clearly, that mixed tag match is coming down the line. But what was it like in the Showboat when Chelsea Green showed up in her visor and face mask?
It was funny because so many people were trying to figure out who it was. Like, you can hear the murmurs of, it was this person. I was like, y'all don't see these boobs? Like, it's clearly Chelsea.
Wait, so she was just there. She was just there in the Showboat all night.
Now, I was there since 11, because I had to go with Faye. Yeah. She had the JCW show earlier, so I was there with the crew helping out. And I didn't see her at all. I saw everybody come through. I saw, you know, Moxley when he came in, did not see that woman one time. So she surprised me. But I was like, when I saw the boobs, I was like, that's Chelsea.
I
heard everyone in the crowd was like, who is that? I think it's this person. I'm like, nope, I see boobs, guys.
I wasn't sure if she had run in from the back or if she had just been sitting like in the crowd for a while with that the visor and the face shield on.
I actually didn't see where she came from when she ran in because of where I was. That was by the merch table.
Okay.
And the camera. So I didn't see where she ran in, but it was just funny hearing people trying to figure out who it was and they were completely wrong. That was great. Great for me.
Fantastic. But Chelsea Green, not the only one making her GCW debut on Saturday. The freaking Briscoe brothers showed up out of nowhere to challenge. Really, if there are any two people who, if you told me were actually Briscoes in disguise, Mance Warner and Matthew Justice, the GCW tag champions, I would completely believe that they're Briscoes. But they stood toe-to-toe with Mark and Jay. It's looking like that match is going to be happening in LA. But GCW kind of on a hot streak right now, especially now that apparently Ring of Honor is letting more than just Jonathan Gresham work independent dates. They have they've been letting some folks enter that forbidden beaded curtain that everyone's been having fun with in New Japan. The beaded it's not a door anymore. A door you have to like turn the handle. There's steps to opening a door.
This you just
walk in and you know make a bit of noise with the beads clacking against each other. But other than that, it's not a door anymore. But yeah, ROH entering in with MLW, with New Japan, with AEW, seeing the all of these you know possibilities come together feels it. It does make for some real exciting times. Now, what'd you kind of think of the Briscoes in GCW? Because, like, personally, I think it's the best fit ever.
First of all, you know I popped.
Yes.
Anytime I see the Briscoes anywhere, I'm, like, excited. So, I think they got the pop of the night. Because, I didn't see them come in either.
Yep.
At all. So, I think that was a perfect fit, especially coming in with them. That group together, that's perfect. Definitely don't be surprised if you see some other special ROH people popping in and out.
It seems that way because especially with GCW heading towards the Hammerstein Ballroom, which yes, I know to a lot of people that's an ECW venue, but especially to a lot of modern wrestling fans, Hammerstein is an ROH venue. Like we think of the huge shows that Ring of Honor, especially during the Gabe Sapolsky and the Kerry Silken eras and all that. So it would make sense if ROH is going to have their presence felt when another independent company starts coming in on their territory. I mean, hell, all that's left is for GCW to run Baltimore at this point.
And they're doing it. It's coming.
I don't doubt it. I saw there were some TBD dates on Brett Lauderdale's schedule, and Baltimore is a hell of a wrestling town. Shout out to former podcast guest Jimmy Seafood. Baltimore's a hell of a wrestling town. I'm almost surprised GCW hasn't run Baltimore yet, but all things in due time. But
timing is perfect.
If we're gonna talk about GCW, I would be remiss if I didn't ask you about the main event, because it's not just Mox versus Gage. It was Mox, Gage, and presenting the title was the hardcore icon Mick Foley, essentially giving his stamp of approval to GCW. What was that moment like in the Showboat? Because like that
felt good.
Yeah.
It felt good. Like, especially if you are a fan of hardcore wrestling, it was chef kiss. It was perfect. Him telling, you know, fuck Matt Cardona, that was great. That was perfect. I want to go back before we go to that. I don't know if the camera caught when one of the Briscoes fell off the ring.
No, they did not. They did not. Please tell me everything about one of the Briscoes eating shit.
I think it was Jay.
Okay.
So he's trying to get on the top rope. Completely Matt Hardy, that bad boy. I have a picture. I'm going to show it to you later.
Oh, Lord. Yeah.
I was like, I wonder if they got that on TV. They did not. That sucks.
Send me the picture. I'll have that up at Ross W. Berman IV on Twitter at some point. We'll get you got to post that as well. We'll make this a multimedia experience for the Thomas Island listeners. But yeah. Oh man, I'm excited. I'm now excited to see how they play off of that, because like the Briscoes are indestructible, so they'll just start falling off of stuff.
Dude, it was so funny. Like, I mean, straight up and down, feet in the air, hand on the apron. Like, it was perfect.
Amazing.
As far as the main event, was great. Like, the energy was so good. It was people paying homage to Mick Foley, of course, being who he is. Him being so humble. It's like he almost doesn't know that he's Mick Foley.
Well, and that's the other thing about him giving a stamp of approval. There's a lot of hardcore legends who, for lack of a better term, are just pieces of shit. I mean, like, complete, absolute, horrible people. Mick Foley, not that, very, very, quite the opposite. I've met one of the nicest guys you will ever meet. Absolutely a sweetheart. And so the fact that someone that has that kind of reputation is giving a stamp of approval to GCW, I think does more than if you just had any of the old hardcore guard.
He was really, really sweet. And the way he interacted with the people, just because he kind of walked around a little bit, but of course he couldn't do but so much because GCW is a crazy place. He complimented my hair. I felt good for the rest of the night. That was cool for me. But the energy for that main event was crazy. It's like you couldn't even get Moxley's name out before he gets cracked over the head with a light tube.
No, yeah.
So as soon as that happened, I was like, okay, buckle up. This is what we're doing. So we're in here.
It was a wild, wild main event. If you haven't seen GCW Fight Club, I highly recommend it. It was a great show. Yes. Aftermath was also very good, but it didn't have the news that Fight Club did. Especially with, I mean, that main event, I know you guys were enjoying it in the showboat, but I was watching it at home and they had Mick Foley on commentary. And so you have Mick Foley, Dave Prazak, and Kevin Gill kind of doing this three-man booth, and Mick still has it. Like, you remember how in, like, I want to say, like, the end of the 2000s, Mick was doing some color commentary on SmackDown every now and then. He hated it, and he quit. He's so good at commentary. Like, just...
He's just good at talking.
But there is a specific skill set for commentary, especially in the way that he was able to... He didn't come in there and bury people like a lot of legends will do when they do commentary, like where he's just like, these guys don't got shit on me. They don't got shit on the guys I've wrestled. Don't get me wrong. That was a good, you know, move or whatever. But he was into it and he was invested. He sounded like he was well informed on the product. He kept telling Renee that he was very sorry every time Mock would start bleeding. Like, I know that he doesn't want to do commentary. He likes to be a part of the action, but man, someone's got to throw some money at him to put him on the mic.
I think the special thing that he has is the fact that he loves wrestling. He hasn't lost that love for wrestling yet. And I think when you get those legends, they have been so battered and bitter that they just don't love the business anymore, but he still loves it. So he's going to tune into the product. He's going to be well informed of the talent. So I got to run it back to hear that. I didn't even hear it.
Oh yeah. No, I highly, if you were there at the Showboat live, I highly recommend dropping a few bucks for the stream. Cause you get Mick Foley calling a Nick Gage match. I mean, that's all I feel like I need to say. but GCW, not the only company making waves lately. Just a couple hours before we went on the air, AEW had a huge-ass announcement that I'm very excited to talk about, because originally we had known SmackDown's going to be supersized this week on Friday. Because of the way the MLB playoffs are going, SmackDown's going to be on Fox Sports 1. Instead of 2 hours, it's going to be 2.5 hours, which means you're going to get that half an hour run over into AEW Rampage. But now... Tony Khan has announced that they aren't going to be competing with WWE just for the half hour. They're going to be bringing in at about 9 p.m. on YouTube a buy-in. Yes, the pre-show usually reserved for pay-per-views is going to be before Rampage. And on Friday's buy-in, with no commercials, free on YouTube to anyone with an internet connection. I mean, you can watch this at public. You could watch this at a public library. If you're going to be at the Chicago Sky game, you can watch it there. You can watch it wherever the hell you can get an internet connection. You're going to have Lee Moriarty versus Bobby Fish, first of all. Hell of a match. Good show. It's going to be Lee Moriarty's first official match since being signed by AEW. But then the main event of the buy-in... for AEW Rampage, free on YouTube. So yes, I see some people saying they don't get Rampage in Canada. You get YouTube. You're going to get this match. So even if you don't get Rampage, you're going to get this match. Bryan Danielson, the American Dragon, versus the King, Minoru Suzuki. I'm going to say this again, because I know I strung that out a little bit. Bryan Danielson versus Minoru Suzuki, free on YouTube this Friday. I mean, Tony Khan is just showing off at this point. Like,
we don't deserve him right now.
If you've listened to this podcast, I have been critical of him in the past. I've been critical of AEW. I will find the wet blanketry in a lot, but man, like, it's first of all to know that he's going head to head with WWE for the first time since NXT was moved off of Wednesdays. To then load up a free YouTube show like this just to really twist the knife. Yeah, because like it's not like people were nervous about AEW going up against SmackDown. They were like, oh, this is gonna be fun, we're gonna like it. It was already, the knife was already in there. But man, once you make that Danielson Suzuki match, you're really trying to grab people. And I gotta salute it. Cause like the other option is Bryan Danielson versus Suzuki is some undercard match that isn't for a title, like on Full Gear or something. And that's fine. Don't get me wrong. I'll be very happy to see an undercard Suzuki versus Danielson match. Yeah. But there's just a little more spark when you know it's the reason everyone's watching. Like
they're gonna put some extra stank on it. You know that.
Oh yeah.
You know they're gonna. Oh my god.
Well, and also the fact that Danielson has not had a pay-per-view match yet. His first three singles matches in AEW are against Kenny Omega, Nick Jackson, and now Minoru Suzuki. We're getting that dream match tour that he kept promising back when he was like, I'm gonna wrestle Grand Metalik every week. It's gonna be great. And now we're really getting it. We're getting those flashes of Brian in the G1 because he's going to be taking on Suzuki. We're getting those flashes of the things that are possible. I don't know. What do you think of Danielson versus Suzuki? What do you think of just this, I don't know, the Friday night shootout, the Friday night skirmish, whatever you want to call this kerfuffle that they're going to get themselves in?
I'm hyped. Like, everyone else hates the discourse between AEW and WWE. Fuck that. I'm with it.
Yeah,
I like it. I want to see them battle it out.
I'm with you. I'm playing both sides against the middle, and the middle are the fans. Like as long as they keep throwing these shots across the bow, wrestling will be fun. Because the last thing you want is for there to be as much wrestling as there is right now, and for it to be a chore. Because like
exactly, because like what I'm saying, that's what people fussed about for so long, is how taxing it was to watch wrestling on TV now. So now you're literally getting dream matches, like live and in color. Granted, there's not too much storyline, but at this point, it's Brian and Suzuki who give a fuck about the storyline.
But and also look at the independents. We don't, like, yes, I think people like stories, but like every independent right now is just doing dream matches. And so why can't we do some dream matches on national TV? Why can't we do some...
I tell people all the time, AEW is literally just the independent scene on TV. Like, that's literally all that it is. And as someone who loves independent wrestling, I love it. Like, they have their issues, of course. Mm-hmm. But that shit is lit to me. I am very excited. You know I love Murder Grandpa.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm with it.
No, I'm even with, like, here's how with it I am. I heard about this match and immediately was excited for it, despite the fact that Bryan Danielson decided over the past... I don't know, sometime within the past week, to remind everyone of what he wrote in his book and what he said in WWE documentaries, which is that in the past, he's lied about his medical history, and this is also something that Nigel McGuinness has cited. When WWE came to Nigel McGuinness and Bryan Danielson, Nigel was honest with them about where his health was at, and that's why he's, you know, an announcer. Bryan Danielson was apparently not quite as forthcoming, and that's why he got hired. And then we saw where the head injury route took them. According to Brian, on multiple occasions, the reason WWE stopped kind of relying on him to be in big match situations like that was because...
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Because they couldn't necessarily trust him to be forthright about his health. Even if now he's being completely forthright, if it's something you've already lied about, it's gonna color people's reactions. Yeah. And so I was walking into this going, I don't know about this Bryan Danielson run. The man's a ticking time bomb. He's still doing the diving headbutt. And apparently Tony Khan's okay with the fact that, like, he could Misawa at any time. He could die in the middle of the ring, and we've been warned.
You hate that. You hate to say it that bluntly, but at the same time, self-accountability comes in at some point. You know what I mean? If this is the hill that he's going to, you know, almost literally die on, you know what I mean? We don't want to see that at all, but I mean, I don't know. I don't know why in the hell he brought that back up. I was like, dude, right before this is a commando.
Because I think it does come from that place of I've lied so much before about my health that now I have to be so honest that I even have to bring up, you know, the stuff that I've done wrong.
Fact that I did lie.
And I respect that part of it, because like I would rather him be open about it than secretive about it. But if he's going to be open about it, he has to deal with the fact that people like me are going to clutch our pearls and go, what are you doing? You have a family.
Exactly.
You have you have a wife, you have a young child. And I don't get me wrong, I understand that there are some sacrifices an artist make. There are a number of times I could have gone the normal route of data entry, and I didn't, and so I understand where Danielson's coming from. But I also, as a musician, I don't have the same risks that Danielson does, especially now that he's still doing the diving head, but especially now that he's gone back to being the American Dragon. But
I make jewelry. Like, the best thing I'm going to do is probably, like, stab my finger or something. So, I mean,
no, exactly. Exactly. And so I don't understand why and this is, again, wrestlers are built different, because there have been a lot of wrestlers, and Danielson's not the only wrestler who's not the most forthcoming about his health. I mean, hell, I'm pretty sure that's how Shibata ended up the way he did. He just kept headbutting until he couldn't headbutt no more. But that's why I get scared. Like, I'm a wrestling journalist. I've seen the video of Silver King. I've seen the video of Perro del Aguayo Jr. I've seen the Misawa video. It's out there. I don't want to have to see it again. Exactly.
Yeah.
But I also really want to see Danielson versus Suzuki, so I'm torn. This is what I'm saying. I'm putting the Bryan Danielson is a ticking time bomb discourse on the shelf until after Suzuki, and then if there are any more dream matches, I'll put it back on the shelf probably again, because I'm a wrestling fan. But
I'm kind of like, at some point you want him to hang it up just to, you know, for self-preservation purposes, and kind of just like be a trainer, be a coach, be a QT Marshall, if anything. You know what I mean? He's not rolling every week. He comes in, does a couple of matches, you know, once however much he wrestles. Do something like that, but preserve yourself, because I want you to retire because you want to, not because you have to.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean?
And that's where I'm at with a lot. Cause like, it's the same with like Matt Hardy's diving leg drop. I've seen the x-rays of his back. I know what's going on with his back and his hip. I don't like to watch it. I don't want Danielson.
Like that. I'm like that with Jeff Hardy. I have said so many times, I love Jeff Hardy, but I want that man to retire so bad, because I'm like, okay, you still got it, but you ain't got it that much. Like, you got one or two swantons left in you, baby. You got to hang that up.
Well, and he might be a guy like Bryan Danielson, where if he really wants to do what he's capable of right now, WWE might not be the place to let him, because he also has he has a history of injuries. He also has a history of not being forthcoming about the state he's in. Yeah. Let's look at, you know, TNA Victory Road 2011. And so I can understand WWE being overprotective of some of these guys. I don't like to side with WWE, but sometimes you can see it. But it's also the wrestling business, and so you do kind of have to just back away and say, "Well, he is a grown ass man making decisions for himself." Yeah. And so we'll see. Either way, I'm excited as hell for Suzuki versus Danielson on Friday.
I'm excited about Lee and Bobby Fish.
That's gonna be a big passing of the torch match. I can already
let me blow the horn just for Lee, because y'all know that's my boy.
Yep.
So seeing him get this moment, man, come on. If there's anybody on the independent scene who was like worthy of what's happening right now, Lee is at the top of the list. And I'm so happy for him. I can't wait for that one.
Well, it's Lee and Daniel Garcia are the two guys that really prove AEW is listening to what fans want from the independent wrestling world. Because, like, WWE will sign, independent favorites. They do it all the time, but they don't.
But they put them in the trash can. Like, well, yeah, the buzz goes off.
Well, and it's not even that they put them in the trash can. They then make them their own thing. And so, like, Daniel Garcia wouldn't be Daniel Garcia. Lee Moriarty wouldn't be Lee Moriarty. Whereas AEW has literally just picked these guys up off the independents and said, here, do what you've been doing.
Do your thing.
And we're now at the point where this is the, I think this is the first Rampage where Daniel Garcia isn't announced.
Yeah.
This is the,
I don't think,
like,
he's on there.
Yeah, no, this, it's, yeah. He might, there's still time for them to announce a Daniel Garcia match, but Mr. Rampage is not on Rampage this week. But considering the fact that he's as new to the company as he is, the fact that he's already Mr. Rampage is insane, is nuts. And so that's one place where I am very happy with how AEW's going. WWE currently in the middle of, they've drafted their rosters. They're waiting for the draft to take effect. So that tells you how much we're supposed to be paying attention to what's going on these next couple weeks, I guess. We got the road to Crown Jewel. We got the Queen's Crown tournament for about 6 minutes for every 3 hours. We've got the King of the Ring tournament, which has some interesting stuff going on. Xavier Woods is on a hell of a run, but it feels like there was some real easy money and some real easy viewership in the idea of a Kofi versus Woods friendly competition semifinal. They decided that's not the route they're going to go. Woods is going to be taking on Jinder Mahal to avenge his fallen comrade, Kofi Kingston.
That was stupid.
Yeah, I was about to say, what do you kind of think of the King of the Ring so far? We'll start with the Xavier Woods, Kofi, Jinder thing.
That, I was like, why would you not do that?
Mm-hmm.
Why would we not have New Day against New Day? But then at the same time, I was also worried about Kofi possibly winning. Because mm-hmm. just think about it. King Kofi Kingston on a t-shirt is going to look ugly.
Oh, yeah. So that's the same reason. That's why I'm glad Karrion Kross wasn't in the tournament. There's just some guys that shouldn't have King added to their name.
If you can imagine Karrion Kross with that, Jesus.
I would only like it if he puts the crown on top of the helmet, and so it's literally a hat on a hat.
I can't deal with it. But I feel like for the King of the Ring tournament, if Xavier Woods doesn't win this, what the hell was the point?
Yeah.
What I mean? Because he's the reason why this is even a thing, really. Because he championed so hard to bring King of the Ring back. Now we have it. You have two people in New Day already been WWE champion. Like, it just makes sense for Xavier to get this.
You know, and I would be with you if on the other side of the bracket they didn't have Sami Zayn taking on Finn Balor. Which, if you know anything about the King of the Ring tournament, to anyone who hasn't been paying attention to WWE programming, the King of the Ring tournament is going to end at Crown Jewel in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia. And if you know anything about Sami Zayn, it's that he is not going to be at the Crown Jewel show in Saudi Arabia. So it's very likely that Finn Balor is going to be in the finals of Crown Jewel. Finn Balor versus
Xavier Woods. That's versus exactly Xavier Woods. Like.
Or Finn Balor versus Jinder Mahal.
Not looking at that. Not listening to that at all.
Not listening to that at all? There. Okay. All right.
You're not
well,
putting that in the universe, dude. That's
I'm just saying India is a huge heel in Saudi Arabia, and so it would be an easy way to get the crowd reactions if they did Finn Balor versus Jinder Mahal. I agree. I hope you're wrong, but even if it's Finn Balor versus Xavier Woods, I do worry about WWE deciding this is where we make the Demon King. He's been the demon, but now he can officially be a king because he won the tournament, and that's what makes me nervous.
That's stupid.
But then you can have I'm obviously being Bruce Pritchard or Vince or whoever the hell decides these things. But then Xavier Woods can be so heartbroken that he can spend the next. He can spend months on up, up, down, down, hyping it up, and then he can be in the Royal Rumble, and we'll all assume he's going to win, and then he's not. He's not going to win the Royal Rumble, but he's going to really. He's going to get that sympathy behind him. I don't know. I can. There's part of me
thinking about the money. See, here's the thing. I'm looking at marketing. You know, I'm always looking at marketing, right? So yep. I'm looking at this like, if Xavier wins, you know, all the costumes and things that New Day does when they come out, and how they. Think about the money that's going to be with King Xavier Woods. He's probably going to come out with like a Minecraft crown or some shit. Like, think about it. Like, It's just too perfect. But I can also see them doing this Demon King shit, which is going to piss me off.
Yeah, because then you get to sell, like, a weird dark crown to, like,
With the dreads and shit.
Yeah, exactly. Because, like, you also have to remember, WWE doesn't have The Fiend anymore. And so they need some kind of spooky lore-filled character. Alexa Bliss isn't quite cutting it for people. Maybe
she's cutting it for Chucky.
Absolutely, she's cutting it for she's cutting it for Chucky. I'm very excited about the fact that we are this close to getting Brad Dourif, a legendary character actor and voice of Chucky on WWE Raw. But it does feel like Finn Balor has this momentum behind him. He just got done with a feud with Roman Reigns, and I don't know.
Was that a feud though? That was just weird.
Anytime he gets beat and then brings out the demon, I consider it a feud. Like, I'm not going to sit here and pretend it was Citizen Kane or anything. But they had multiple matches. They had multiple matches that ended with the Demon King, and he also lost because the top rope snapped. And so, like, this could be his way to build back for vengeance. I don't know.
You see my face? Do you see my face with that? Did you see the video from the ring snapping?
Yep. No. And I see the expression of what, why that is coming on your face that I assume is coming on a lot of the listeners' faces right now. And I will always stand by this. The number one reaction that WWE wants to get people to have is what, why? Because what the hell keeps you watching, because you have to figure out what the hell's going on, and so you have to keep, you know, even if you don't want to, you have to keep watching to get that tonic chord. Like, if you get a big, you know, happy moment, that's a good place for people to leave. I mean, hell, look at the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Endgame happened, and all of a sudden people are like, cool, I can get the hell off of this ride now. I don't need to watch another 20 movies. I'm at the end.
Yeah. And the ring breaks, and then we, of course, see the unfortunate video of what actually happened. So this is a part of the storyline now. What the fuck are y'all doing with it? Like, we haven't talked about this ring snapping at all.
Well, but because from what I understand, the kayfabe is the ring snapped, and then a fan was the one that pointed out that it was a stagehand or a cameraman or something cutting. So I don't know if that's necessarily part of the story or just them getting so lazy the smoke and mirrors are right there and people are filming it. Because, like, I don't know. I'm hoping that they reveal it was, like, The Miz or something was the one to... Well, I'm thinking of people who haven't been on TV for a while who need something to do. It would make sense if The Miz, like, cut the rope. But I wouldn't be surprised if they're trying to paint it as a fluke so that way next time Finn Balor goes up against Roman Reigns, they're not going to be able to say, well, he beat him once before. You know, it's especially
honestly, because we had the reports that AEW is not talking to Bray Wyatt. I was thinking maybe this is their way of bringing the Fiend back, saying that this is some weird force that snapped the ropes or some shit like that. And then we finally get the Fiend versus the Demon, because no one knows what's going on with Bray Wyatt. You know, there's the talk of possibly Impact, but, you know, AEW already said we haven't talked to him at all.
Yep.
So, you know, hearing that they were kind of upset about the Fiend being released, I'm thinking they may be trying to work that back in.
From your lips to Vince's ears, because, like, I really do think that I don't think even if he's not the Fiend, I don't know where Kendall Windham fits in AEW or even Impact. He could do a Bray Wyatt like thing, but then you run the risk of
you run the risk of
being a copy of a copy. And so I'm with you. I think WWE is the place for Bray, specifically Bray Wyatt. I think they have the ability to make him wild. I'm seeing people in the chat bring up the idea of maybe it was Will-O-The-Wisp. They keep talking about the idea of Jeff Hardy bringing in his alternate persona into the WWE universe.
I can't see the chat, but if that happens, I'm coming for all y'all. Whoever's saying that.
To be fair, I think Corey's in Canada, so it'll take some doing to get to him. But yeah, it definitely I don't know. I hope it's Woods winning the King of the Ring for the good moment of it. But I am one of those people who, when I see WWE get in I've seen them get in their way so many times, and I'm like, well, here's a way they could trip on their feet. Here's a way they could trip on their feet. They got a lot of rakes to step on. Let's put it that way. Yeah. They have a lot of rakes that they could be stepping on. And I hope I'm wrong about that. I hope that I'm wrong about the Queen's Crown tournament and that soon it will start to mean something. But right now,
I'm not invested in that at all. And that's weird for me.
They don't give you time to invest. By the time you're starting to invest, the match is over. That's what happens when you have a very short match.
I'm like, what are we doing? Like, let's not even do this. Like, if you're going to do it, don't half-ass it. Like, let's do it. You know what I mean? The only thing I'm invested in right now is like Naomi and Sonya's storyline right now.
Yeah. And it kind of reminds me of like the opposite of the mixed match challenge. Cause remember when the mixed match challenge was happening and everyone was pissed off that it was on YouTube or whatever.
Yeah.
Now it feels like they're like, here, we've put your tournament on TV. Shut up and take. Yeah, exactly. And then just to really throw some salt in the wound, they're like, oh, and they're only going to get like 3 minutes per match. Cause fuck you. Like there are some times where, and I think they even think they're doing this lovingly, but there are a lot of times where WWE is just in the business of flipping off the audience and hoping that the audience likes it. Some of them do, some of them don't, but you know, the billions are still there. It definitely feels like the Queen's Crown tournament is an afterthought. I mean, hell, even the fact that it's not the Queen of the Ring makes it kind of feel less like, I know they don't want to make it like, oh, it's the pink version of King of the Ring, but it also it also kind of makes it seem like it's this other thing.
They
forgot was happening, you know, because it's like they didn't give it the name, they didn't give it the status. We'll see if the final feels competitive, but I'm doubting it.
It's not.
I'm doubting it.
It's a bunch of women. 3 minutes isn't enough for women. Let's talk about it. No matter what we're talking about, three minutes isn't going to cut it. Come on, guys.
And you do bring up a good point. We haven't been given the time to invest in a lot of these characters that we have into the men's roster. And so when you add the fact that we haven't gotten the time to invest in the characters, we haven't gotten time to invest in the matches, what the fuck are we supposed to invest in here? What am I supposed to sink my teeth into? There's nothing there.
This is definitely one of those participation awards for sure.
Yes. No, it's to make sure that no one complains about the fact they're going back to Saudi Arabia. Right? That's anytime they do a big women's spectacle, it's usually right around October or so when they're heading back to Riyadh, because as we all know, Saudi Arabia is something of a human rights nightmare. Granted, right. We're in America, but kind of glass houses at the moment, but still still deserves to be said. WWE, while the main roster is not quite clicking with people, even Roman doesn't seem to be like, now that they've brought in Brock and it's like all about Heyman, it doesn't even feel like Roman is quite as important as he was over the past few months.
Heyman's the star. I told you. I said that on Twitter. I think Paul Heyman is the star of this whole thing anyway. Without Paul Heyman, Roman wouldn't shine as bright as he is right now anyway. Like all those little nuances that he does when he comes out, when he speaks, you know, the shock and the fear that he gives when Roman talks, all of that makes the Tribal Chief what it is.
Mm-hmm. Well, and also part of it is Roman could be the worst. He's not, but he could be the worst promo in the entire company. And as long as he has Paul Heyman, one of the best promos, one of the best talkers in the history of wrestling, staring at him lovingly, it's the seal of approval. He could be literally he could be reading the phone book, and as long as Paul Heyman's standing there, I'm like, yeah, this guy's making some points. He's right. B does come after A.
You need to put Ricochet with Paul Heyman, because that guy is a nightmare.
Thank you. Thank you. That is
at least a Zelina Vega.
Yeah.
Somebody needs to have the mic for this dude.
No, I'm completely with you. I think it makes a lot of sense that Karrion Kross and Ricochet have been kind of bouncing off of each other a lot lately, because they are both characters who need a manager. Kross needs Scarlett. Ricochet needs literally anyone.
Anybody.
Yeah, exactly. I'm cheap. That's all I'm saying.
right. I don't cost that much.
Mm-hmm. I'm even cheap for WWE.
Add to my belt collection. We got it. We're good.
Exactly. They're going to pay you in merch. That's nice. And so it does kind of feel like it feels like Roman has taken a backseat to Heyman. Hell, even Brock has kind of taken a backseat to Heyman, which is so weird considering the way they brought Brock back. But one brand that is really popping off right now, NXT. People cannot stop talking about NXT 2.0, specifically Bron Breakker. And, yep, I see you making the hand signal. And specifically, the man that debuted last week to thunderous applause and a million memes, Tony D'Angelo, the Chicago gangster with Atlantic connections, made his debut, tried to bribe the ref.
That was so perfect.
One with a...
If you didn't see it, you missed it. It was so good.
Yep, he tried to bribe the ref. He does the three-handed moss-covered family credenza as his finisher. I mean, this guy is Italian through and through. What do you kind of think of the reaction to Tony? Because, like, I get it. But you and me, we both love Tony, the wrestler. Yeah. Love the character. What do you think of the reaction that he's been getting?
That was fantastic. So it was. I love the fact that so many people were so prepared for him to come. Mm-hmm. Like I didn't expect so many people to be as invested in it as they are.
Yep.
But that this right here, if they don't capitalize on this, when it comes to debuts, I get really nervous. But his debut was perfect. It wasn't too much. It was perfect.
For anyone that is going to be listening to this podcast later, not watching the video, when we say this, what we're talking about is the Italian American hand signal. Yeah, it's what Ellen DeGeneres used to call the toilet paper pull. It's you know the emoji. You know what we're talking about. It's the Italian hand sign. But yeah, I think Tony D'Angelo is the first case, especially in the past couple of years, of WWE truly being on the pulse of things.
Yeah.
Because there was an article earlier in the summer where people started to notice, man, young people are watching The Sopranos a lot. Like, a lot. Like, there's memes. No matter what political alignment you have, there is a Sopranos meme group for you. I've seen conservative Sopranos memes. I've seen socialist Sopranos memes. There's just no matter who you are, there are Soprano memes for you. And then you also add the fact that his debut came right after the weekend that the Many Saints of Newark, the Sopranos prequel, premiered on HBO. This is the first time that WWE has really said, like, hey, something is happening here. We've got a guy that can capitalize on this. Let's fucking go. And
I don't know who they're listening to, but it was perfectly aligned. You can't get no better than that particular debut.
No, and that's what I mean. It kind of feels like this is going to be a weird thing to compare Tony D'Angelo to. But it reminds me of Goldberg in the way that WCW saw Stone Cold Steve Austin was getting huge. And they said, you know what? We have a bald guy in black trunks that we can send out there to kick some ass. And it's the same kind of vibe of WWE going like, look, these Sopranos memes are everywhere. Even people that don't watch The Sopranos are using that gif of Tony walking down the boardwalk with a big shit-eating grin on his face. And in the aftermath of his debut, you're seeing memes upon memes. Whenever NXT tweets out anything about Tony D'Angelo, the engagement is insane.
Even Liv Morgan putting him over the way that she—that was crazy.
She's Jersey Italian. She absolutely has. That's why I have to. There is an old agreement: Jews and Italians, we support each other from time immemorial. And so I absolutely, I'm a Tony D'Angelo guy through and through. WrestleMania 40, give me Bron Breakker versus Tony D'Angelo. But it's such a unique response, because even the name I just brought up, Bron Breakker, he's had real good momentum behind him, but he doesn't have the memes that Tony D'Angelo does. He doesn't have that. He hasn't quite captured people's imaginations the way that Tony D'Angelo has.
You know why I think that is?
Why?
The name.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, that name is what's the only crippling he has. Because I can see, you know, as fresh as he is, he'll probably be on the main roster by next year, honestly. I don't see him in NXT very long. But that name, it's like you want to get behind him, but it's like, I'm not saying Bron fucking Breakker. I'm not saying that. That's stupid. You know what I mean? It's kind of one of those things. But Tony D'Angelo, because you have because you say it, you have to say it with like the Italian accent a little bit. Yeah, well, and you, the hand.
You gotta do that. Yeah, do the hand signal. Well, and that's I think the difference is like Bron Breakker. If you're a wrestling fan who remembers Rick Steiner, you remember Scott Steiner, you love Bron Breakker because like he says bullshit exactly like his father and uncle did. The most recent episode of NXT, they had him suddenly doing math. Like they are guiding him down that Steiner path, but he doesn't have the name, and so it becomes this like inside thing. Like there are plenty of memes about Bron Breakker, but there are memes about Bron Breakker in the way that there are memes about like the Shockmaster, where it's people who have been in this shit for a really long time that you know kind of get the echoes that they're saying. Whereas with Tony D'Angelo, you don't even have to watch wrestling. You just have to know they've got this Sopranos guy. Even though the funniest part of Tony D'Angelo, every time they hype him up, they show the Chicago skyline. He keeps talking about how he's from Chicago. And even guys like Sean Ross Sapp, who should know better, are like, this guy's from New Jersey. He's a New Jersey guy, right? And as someone in Chicago, I'm like, well, they did have him wander around the docks. We don't have docks in Chicago.
It's okay.
So, yeah. No, and it totally works. Like, that's the thing. I just think it's so funny that they worked so hard to make him like this Al Capone Chicago gangster. And everyone's like, nah, he's Tony Soprano.
We love that, though.
Oh,
Listen, I promise you, they hit a home run with this guy. Yeah. And if they stay in this vein, my only fear, because this is still WWE we're talking about, right?
Yep.
They always oversaturate things. If they start having him come out with like pasta and shit and doing some crazy bullshit, that's when I'm like, okay, you're taking away the authenticity of it. Like, let's just let this guy go. Well, he's on a stride right now.
Well, and that's the one thing I'm real excited about is tonight on NXT, we're taping this on Tuesday. So by the time this episode comes out, it will have already happened. But Tony D'Angelo is supposed to make an appearance on a Lash Legends show. Lashing out on NXT. And she's another character that like, you talk about how Ricochet needs a manager. Lash is great. Like she has this like personality to her. And I think her and Tony D'Angelo, I think as long as this segment goes even passably, you're looking at the next like Stan couple from wrestling fans.
What's that movie? A Brooklyn's Tale? A Bronx Tale?
Bronx Tale, yeah.
Ah, that's perfect. Yep. Let's do it. I'm sold on that. When I saw them interact that one time, I was like, this has to happen. This is it.
Well, and speaking as someone who has hung out on the south side of Chicago, I have seen that conversation happen. I've seen a Tony D'Angelo talk with a Lash legend so many times that like this is what I mean when I say that NXT looks like America right now. Like there are a lot of wrestling companies that look like wrestling companies, but like NXT looks like I walked down the street, I ran into Hit Row, I ran into Briggs and Jensen, I met every single person in NXT.
I've had my Tony D'Angelo moments as well, so I definitely understand how real this is.
Yep. No, I do not doubt that. I do not doubt that. But it's that little extra thing that I think works. Like I'm real excited to see what happens now that Hit Row is going to be on SmackDown. Cause like that they capture people's attention. Like no one talks like Hit Row does. No one has the kind of, how do I put this? The promos that they've been doing, the backstage promos that they'll do, whether it's in the studio, whether it's backstage, they feel like they hang out. And I feel like there are a lot of factions that don't feel like they hang out. Like LIJ, I don't actually believe that those guys get dinner together. I don't believe that the Pinnacle hang out. I believe that Hit Row, like, hangs out. I believe that they were hanging out before they were Hit Row. And so, like,
I think that's something we talked about on the island before, too, having factions together that feel like they are actually buddies as opposed to people that they just threw together in a grab bag.
Yeah.
The only thing with Hit Row, and I'll say it because a lot of people, you know, jumped on this guy for saying what I'm about to say, but I agreed with them. Mm-hmm. Do I feel like it was too premature for them to be called up? 100%. Yep. I think it was way too premature. Not that I don't think they're good. I love them. I think B-Fab has a lot of work to do personally. Mm-hmm. I love her, but she has a lot of work to do in the ring. Yep. I think they could have kind of pulled that out a little bit longer in NXT before they brought them up. But do I understand why they were brought up so early? Yeah, of course.
No, and my whole thing is like, I don't understand bringing them up so early because of how like central they were to those first couple weeks of NXT 2.0. Like,
exactly.
Don't get me wrong, they're gonna have a lot more room for Tony D'Angelo and all those kind of guys. I'm very excited, but I'm curious to see what NXT looks like without Hit Row. And we still have a couple weeks. Like I said, the draft doesn't really take effect until October 22nd, and so Hit Row Isaiah Swerve Scott is going to be taking on one of the members of Phantasma. I'm blanking at the moment because I've been up all night for G1 coverage. But
I'm so tired too. I don't know.
Yeah, exactly. look it up. I'm sure it's on their YouTube. But it's going to be he's probably going to drop the North American title over the next couple weeks unless that moves to SmackDown. Santos, thank you, Meow Run Love 34 in the chat. He's taking on Santos Escobar for the North American title. But it is going to be interesting because I have to believe Legado del Fantasma is going to be taking over that central role that Hit Row kind of had, because I don't see Bron Breakker replacing five people. I don't see Tony D'Angelo replacing five. You know what I mean?
Unless he brings his cousins,
which, hey, more D'Angelos in wrestling.
I'm so with that. I want to call somebody now.
I want him to bring his real cousins, and then I want him to bring his Italian cousins, where it's like, you know, we're cousins, you know.
We have to have a mother. We have to have an Italian mother come in. Like, you have to do that. It has to happen.
I need, like, right before his first, like, big title match, like, his little Italian mother, like, fixing his, like, gear and everything. Like, oh, I'm so proud. Like, they're, oh.
Tell him he needs to eat more.
I bring me in NXT. I've got so many ideas. I have watched the canon. We'll make beautiful music together with Tony D'Angelo. But yeah, NXT is, it's, for lack of a better term, it's exciting. It's fresh. It's colorful. It's wild, but it's going to be a wild week in wrestling. Like I said, NXT tonight, we're going to have some stellar stuff. AEW is in Miami. They're going to be doing the in-ring debut of Junior Dos Santos. I kind of do want to touch on this because, like, AEW bringing in UFC, well, not necessarily UFC. They're all former UFC fighters, but they're going real hard on that MMA versus wrestling thing. Wrestling might win. I don't know. I'm hearing from MMA reporters that, like, wrestling's bigger than MMA right now, or at least a little more hot. What do you kind of think of the Dan Lambert American Top Team story that's going on in AEW right now?
I like it because it starts to kind of, like, connect the dots with mainstream a little bit.
Yep.
Somebody actually hit me up on Twitter and asked me, do I think that wrestling will ever have, like, a renaissance moment like they had in the Attitude Era? I say, honestly, right now, because wrestling, they had it on what's the show, Blackish? They were talking about Okada
and Tanahashi. Yep.
Yeah.
And in fact, Paul Walter Hauser, I guess, in his most recent movie, Paul Walter Hauser apparently had, it was all written for WWE references, and he's like, hey, I'm a pretty big AEW fan, can I just change these to AEW? And they were like, yeah, sure. And so now AEW is gonna be in a major motion picture being referenced by by Oscar nominee Paul Walter Hauser. So
that's what I'm saying. So, like, we're actually in a new version of what wrestling was during the Attitude Era. You know what I mean? Because you have it on television. You have Big E at the fucking fights. You know, like, if he's doing the opening for Wilder and shit like that.
Yep.
Like, things like this are done strategically to get everything to mainstream, and people forget that because a lot of times people get frustrated when you see non-wrestling people come into wrestling. But I'm like, this is to put us on top as a community of wrestling fanatics. You want to see that. You want to see more eyes, because the more eyes, that means the more money, the bigger the matches, the more people they can pay. You get your dream match, you get your storylines. Follow me, if you will. You know what I mean? Like, you have to understand what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's amazing. Like, I'm not necessarily UFC MMA invested, but I see what's going on and I appreciate it. So him coming in to me is perfect. Perfect.
I'm with you. And you do bring up a good point of that mainstream thread, because, like, I love wrestling fans. We lose that thread a lot. Like more than a lot of fandoms, in fact. And so it is real nice to see Dan Lambert talking like a person that would talk about wrestling if they weren't involved in it. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like there are so many wrestling heels. Like, MJF is a good example of this. I think he's very good at pissing off wrestling fans. But if you're not a wrestling fan, you're just kind of like, oh, that guy seemed, you know, exactly. Whereas, like, Dan Lambert, you kind of want to see him get punched in the face. You
want to see him get fucked up, no matter
exactly
who you are.
And he's done such a good job of in every photo having this face of, oh God, I'm here again.
Yeah.
Like just the face that he has that says, thank God they're paying me for this shit is just, it's that next level thing that I think really.
That's what you want.
Yep.
That's what you want. Wrestling fans have this thing where we want wrestling to stay so closeted and like it's only ours. And we're so afraid for it to be tainted because then it's going to be, you know, that whole thing. It's going to be mainstream. Yep. It's going to be not authentic. But I'm like, dude, we have like a celebrity wing in the fucking Hall of Fame. Like it's already tainted. What are we doing? Like you just have to take it for what it is and understand that this is a good thing for us. The more eyes, the more money. This is what we talked about on the panel. The exact same thing.
More eyes, more. No, I'm with you, which is like, I really do. I feel like the way Dan Lambert has kind of brought in that kind of old school vibe, that outside of wrestling vibe. But then you also add the fact that, like, I think there's a lot of people who want wrestling to stay closeted because, as we've seen from Dark Side of the Ring, wrestling is a fucked up business. Like, especially historically, like the past of wrestling is a dirty, grimy, filthy place. But then you look at the way that how far it's come. Because, like, a good example of this is former WCW wrestler Crowbar recently was at an AEW Dark taping. He was at the Philadelphia show because they did a lot of tribute to ECW and to the Philly independent scene. And so Crowbar was there. And one of the things that he really brought up was how welcoming the roster was. Because, like, Crowbar, he's a veteran, and a lot of people in AEW have either worked with him or gotten physical therapy from him. Like, I'm not going to pretend he's nobody. But he's not Ric Flair. He's not Hulk Hogan. He's not one of these giants of the wrestling world where, like, everyone's going to be walking on eggshells making sure they're real polite to him.
He's like a Norman Smiley.
Exactly. And so the fact that they're welcoming Crowbar in with open arms really suggests that, and to the point that now Crowbar is saying, like, this is a different business from when I walked into a WCW locker room and everyone was mad and political and wanted to, you know, carve each other's throats out. Now it's a much different place. And so I think the way Thursday nights on Vice are going, you have Dark Side of the Ring showing what wrestling used to be, and then you have MLW showing what wrestling is now. I was originally like, I don't know about following Dark Side of the Ring with wrestling. It kind of poisons the well. But when you think about how far wrestling has come, and especially in the wake of comments like Crowbar made, it might be the most brilliant thing to do right now to bring outsiders.
Duality.
Well, and because also there are a lot of football fans who, when Big E shows up at the Iowa game, or boxing fans when Big E shows up at boxing, are going to go, hey, that's great, but I still don't care about wrestling. There are plenty of casual people, like non-wrestling fans, that watch Dark Side of the Ring. That, like, now if you have them being brought into wrestling by MLW, they're going to stick around. I'm not gonna sit here and pretend every single non-wrestling Dark Side of the Ring viewer is gonna be converted, but you're gonna get those eyes. And that's gonna be important.
You're gonna get a good amount of them because nothing draws people in like drama. And you hate to say it, but it's true.
Yep.
Drama, messiness, you know, tragedy, trauma, that kind of thing is gonna draw people in. So you see something like Dark Side of the Ring, and then you see the next show of, like, they go through this and then put on this kind of performance. That's crazy. Or you see the evolution of what wrestling has become. Granted, still some really shitty shit going on.
Oh no, I'm not going to sit here and pretend that the wrestling business has been fixed at all. I mean, hell, the past 24 hours, I've been watching Joey Ryan use a bunch of burner accounts to
oh my God,
string up David Bixenspan for getting a loan. I mean, like, who the fuck cares? I'm with you. There is a lot of bad stuff in wrestling right now, but the fact that we're able to say it's bad stuff is kind of the progress.
Point.
Like, there was a point where even if you said it was bad stuff, you'd end up
getting your head chopped off.
Yeah, you end up in a ditch somewhere in Memphis. But it's gonna be a big ass time to be a wrestling fan. Like, this Friday is gonna be so much fun. Because, like, don't get me wrong. Rampage is going to be fun. The buy-in for Rampage is going to be fun. But WWE, they're not going to hang on the ropes and let AEW get in a bunch of punches. Like, there's going to be something big on SmackDown.
I don't know what, but something's happening.
I think you bring up a great point that we're about to hit this renaissance. And I think this Friday is one of those shows that is one of those nights that's really going to put us on the road to that.
I can't wait.
Oh, it's going to be so much fun. And it's going to, and not only is wrestling going to be fun, Tama's Island is going to be a lot of fun. Like I said, Kenesha's going to be joining us a lot more. Tama will be back likely next week. He's been traveling this week, but we're going to have Kenesha on a lot more. We're going to be having, if you watched, I believe it was last week or a couple weeks ago, we had Karen on. Karen's going to be, can be coming on a lot more. We got some fresh blood coming into Tama's Island. And we thank you all. Whether you're subscribing on Twitch, thank you for subscribing. Thank you for chatting. If you're over at patreon.com/Tama's Island, thank you for subscribing. Hell, if you're just listening to this randomly for free, thank you for listening. Your listens, your subscriptions, everything. We could not do this without you. Kenesha, before we call it here, where can people find you online if you want them to find you?
If you want to find me on Twitter, you can find me at Lola, L-O-L-A _BLUU. If you have Instagram, you can just type in Just Me Lovely, and that's going to always be me. And if you need jewelry, I don't really have a lot on today, but I do make jewelry. So if you need anything, please let me know, and I got you.
Hell yeah. Get some of that jewelry. You can dress like a wrestler. There's a lot of wrestlers wearing it now.
Right.
It's you're practically making gear at this point. Good on you. That's what I've always respected the hustle. If you need to find me, I'm at Ross W. Berman IV on Twitter, Ross Berman IV on Instagram, rossberman.bandcamp for all my music. I got a real dark album coming out on October 29th. It'll be fun. It's all about America. I'm a few tracks into it. It's gonna get weird. If you want to find Tama online, like I said, he'll be back likely next week at the Good Bad Guy Tama Tonga on Instagram. Tama _ Tonga on Twitter. Tama's Island on Twitter and Instagram, and obviously on Patreon. Thank you again for tuning in, and thank you Kenesha for joining us. We'll see you all next week. Unless you're an Islander, we'll see you Saturday for happy hour. Take care, y'all, and have a good one.
Thank you for listening to this week's Tama's Island. Find more great Tama's Island content like the Shotgun series, weekly happy hour Zoom calls with Tama, video versions of the podcast, and much, much more at patreon.com/Tama's Island, and visit @Tama's Island on Instagram and Twitter.